Last year, North Korea tested more missiles than any other year and showcased its capability to launch different types of attacks from multiple directions. Its leader Kim Jong-un has vowed to expand its nuclear arsenal and mass-produce tactical nuclear weapons targeting South Korea. In response to these provocations, the U.S.-South Korea alliance remains strong as a core deterrent against North Korean aggression. With increasing hostile rhetoric from all sides, what are the prospects for resuming peace talks? Has the Russian war in Ukraine impacted Kim's calculus? What are China's role and interests on the Korean Peninsula, and how are they affected by its strategic rivalry with the U.S.? My name is Zoe Leung. I'm the Senior Director of Research at the George H.W. Bush Foundation for U.S.-China Relations. And welcome to the Bush China Foundation podcast. Today, we'll discuss the North Korea nuclear threat and its implications with Dr. Seong Hyung Lee, our senior fellow and a visiting scholar at the Harvard University Fairbanks Center for Chinese Studies. He is also a non-resident senior fellow at Peking University Center for Korean Peninsula Studies and Seoul National University's China Center. Previously, he served as director of the Center for Chinese Studies and the Department of Unification Studies at the Sejong Institute, a foreign policy and security think tank in Seoul. He was a Pantech Fellow at Stanford's Shaanxi Asia-Pacific Research Center, Salzburg Global Fellow, and James A. Kelly Korean Studies Fellow of the Pacific Forum. Dr. Lee is the author of the book, The U.S.-China Competition, Who Will Rule the World? And is a frequent contributor to journal articles about the Korean perspectives on U.S.-China and China-Korea relations and China's relationship with North Korea, including in China Report, The Washington Quarterly, Asian Perspective, International Journal of Korean Unification Studies, and Journal of Korean Studies. He has written numerous op-eds and policy papers on security issues in East Asia and has advised South Korean officials and corporations on China. Seong Hyung, welcome to our podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. It's very gracious of you to go over my experience and background. Some of them are previous backgrounds, but thank you for going over in detail.
Seong Hyung, there is so much I want to discuss. North Korea's testing spree and the U.S. and its allies' resolute response to these provocations have raised tensions on the Korean Peninsula. How was 2022 different? And how worried should we be about a nuclear escalation?
This is a good question. I think it's definitely something we should pay attention to. You know, last year, North Korea tested more missiles in a single year than any other year in history. Its missile and nuclear arsenal improvement is something that poses, you know, real security concerns. For instance, North Korea flew its ballistic missile within the disputed inter-Korean maritime demarcation line, which is a de facto maritime border between the two Koreas, for the first time since the Korean War last year. North Korea also recently tested a missile that flew over Japan. What if we flew in Japan? Then what could have happened? You know, possible consequences. North Korea also tested a nuclear-armed Hwasong-17 ICBM that it aims to reach the continental United States. So North Korea is not a theoretical threat, but a clear and present threat, not just to its immediate neighbors, but also to the United States as well.
There's been speculation and contentions around the possibility of a regime collapse in North Korea, which some observers believe makes Pyongyang more dangerous. What's your take on that?
Well, discussions surrounding the regime instability, you know, the regime instability of North Korea has always been a very hot topic for many years. In the context of your question, I think what people are worried about are mainly two things. One is North Korean refugees. Many of these refugees will be armed with weapons in times of contingency and try to go to neighboring countries such as China and South Korea. there might be some unfortunate crashes and casualties, you know, something that, you know, not exactly the same, but something similar to what happened in Ukraine, Russian invasion of Ukraine. There are a lot of civilian casualties. And number two issue is what happens to nuclear weapons, of course. In case of North Korea's contingency or regime collapse, the most important task is to secure North Korea's nuclear weapons for safety so that it won't be smuggled out into the hands of terrorists, for instance. So Washington will go in and China will go in. And in case there is not enough coordination and communication between Washington and Beijing, there might be military confrontation or even accidental clashes between U.S. military and Chinese People's Liberation Army. But for many of these years, actually, North Korea has beaten the odds of all these collapse scenarios. When, you know, Kim Jong-un's grandfather, the late leader Kim Il-sung, who founded North Korea, when he died in 1994, CIA actually predicted that the regime could only survive for a few months. And perhaps the CIA was so confident with its conviction of North Korea's imminent collapse that Washington stopped providing its promised crude oil to North Korea, which was in exchange for North Korea's peddling back of its burgeoning nuclear weapons program. And the logic was that you didn't have to fulfill your side of obligation when the other side, which was North Korea in this case, would not exist anymore. However, as Donald Gregg, a former CIA station chief in South Korea, said, North Korea is the biggest failure in the history of U.S. government's intelligence. And perhaps it continues to be that way even today.
This is actually a great segue for us to dig deeper into the topic of U.S. policy toward North Korea. So as you mentioned, the prospects of a nuclear-armed North Korea present direct security challenges to the U.S. and its allies in East Asia. So Washington has been clear that if North Korea uses a nuclear weapon, the regime will not survive. And the U.S. has had over the years a range of policy options, from sanctions to diplomatic initiatives and incentives to induce North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons. And yet, Pyongyang said it won't give them up and has recently put out a new law that authorizes preemptive use of nuclear weapons to protect its regime. In your opinion, has U.S. policy toward North Korea failed?
Well, you know, certainly there is room for soul searching. You know, could the United States have done more, or what could we have done differently, and so on. You know, as time passes, North Korea's nuclear arsenal has become more sophisticated, and the whole North Korean issue for the last 30 years has become more and more complicated. And my sense is that because of the growing complexity year by year, at some point, the U.S. government leaned its focus on managing the issue rather than solving the North Korean issue. That's why many, you know, North Korea experts in Washington, you know, when I meet with my colleagues in Washington, they say that, you know, when it comes to North Korean issue, Washington's policy is kicking the can down the road. So even as early as in the year 2003, Washington, in a sense, outsourced the North Korean issue to China by encouraging Beijing to host the six-party talks. It's like yielding the driver's seat to someone when the car is yours. It's your car, but you are yielding the driver's seat to someone else to drive. So North Korea became China's problem, not Washington's problem to solve. It sounds a smart way to do, but the problem is that when you don't have the ownership of the issue, you don't put your heart into it. And again, kicking the can down the road for many, many years. And I think that one problem with Washington's strategy of outsourcing North Korean issues to China was that we didn't study North Korea's feelings towards China very carefully. Simply put, you know, North Korea deeply, deeply mistrusts China. You know, even Mike Pompeo, the former Secretary of State, in his new book, new memoir, talked about this issue. And in the book, you know, Pompeo shared that Kim Jong-un, North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un told Pompeo that North Korea prefers the presence of U.S. military in South Korea as a protection against China's dominance in the region. I think that among North Korea analysts, you know, this is not very surprising at all. This is not new information at all. Even Kim Jong-un's father, Kim Jong-il, in the year 2000, sent his top military general, named Zhou Myung-ro, General Zhou, to Washington as his special envoy to the White House. And he met with President Bill Clinton and invited Clinton to visit North Korea. General Zhou also reportedly conveyed a message from the North Korean leader, which was the same as what Mike Pompeo shared in his latest book. And furthermore, based on my understanding, North Korea even hinted at, you know, aligning with the United States, cooperating with the United States to contain China. So for the first timers, it may be very difficult to imagine North Korea working for the Team USA in dealing with China, right? But I think that that's why I didn't take the proposal very seriously. I think they should have. It's a missed opportunity. And if you look at the history, the convoluted history of negotiations between US and North Korea, there are some very, very, very interesting and also very important missed opportunities. I think we should carefully review those.
That's very interesting. And we will pick up on the piece about China's role shortly. But before that, just a follow-up question. North Korea has indicated no interest in resuming nuclear talks with Biden's team. Help us unpack, what does Kim want, and has the Russia-Ukraine war changed his calculus?
I think North Korea is shifting to what I would say is a plan B. There was a long analytic mantra among analysts that North Korea's provocation was aimed at getting the attention of Washington. It's like Washington was North Korea's plan A. Washington was the one North Korea wanted to go to the prom night. However, you know, Trump ditched Kim Jong-un in 2019 during their Hanoi rendezvous. The negotiation fell apart. So North Korea became a broken heart, so to speak. And, you know, Kim Jong-un, the North Korean leader, he traveled 66 hours of a train to meet his darling Trump. But their love affair, you know, I'm just, you know, just paraphrasing, you know, in my own words, just to make a story, their love did not, you know, materialize. So that chapter, the North Korea's love affair with the United States, the plan A was over. So the new chapter, the plan B, began. After the collapse of negotiations in Hanoi in 2019, you know, that was the period when U.S.-China relations became more and more tense and their relation became deteriorating. And in November 2019, Henry Kissinger said that, you know, U.S.-China relations, we are in the foothills of a new Cold War. Interestingly, later that same month, Kim Jong-un gave a speech to North Korea's parliament, and he said the current international politics has become reduced to a new Cold War. And this is where Kim Jong-un's plan B began. During the Cold War, North Korea's strategy was to get close to China and also Russia to a certain extent for a maximum benefit, making good use of its ideological solidarity. And Russian invasion of Ukraine later also happened, creating chasm between U.S.-Russia relations on top of the deteriorating U.S.-China relations. While the United States is also, on the other hand, also strengthening its alliance structure with Japan and also South Korea in East Asia. So if you look at it, it's very similar to the Cold War to the eyes of Kim Jong-un. So Kim in North Korea could recycle its old strategy that it used during the Cold War by getting close to China. And so in a way, North Korea has found its new prom night partner. It's North Korea's plan B to get close to China, just like good old days of the Cold War. And for North Korea, this Cold War is more than okay. It's very good because China will provide North Korea with more economic aid. China will protect North Korea from the international criticism, from UN Security Council punitive sanctions when North Korea conducts missile tests. Actually, it just happened many times before and happened recently again. And Russia will also jump in and protect and veto, you know, Washington's attempt to have punitive measures against North Korea's belligerent nuclear and missile tests. And the good thing is that, you know, from the eyes of North Korea, China also doesn't attempt a regime change in North Korea, as Pyongyang fears Washington and its allies are attempting to do. So this is what I think is happening.
This is very interesting. Beijing definitely has a big role in all of this, given the proximity and also its relationship with Pyongyang. I'm just wondering, how does Beijing view North Korea's provocations and also U.S. allies' actions in response to North Korea's provocations?
Well, China sees the Korean Peninsula as its backyard from geopolitical perspective. And China wants its backyard to be quiet. However, given the U.S.-China rivalry, China is regarding the U.S. and its allies as more problematic in making noises in its backyard than North Korea's missiles and nuclear tests that we are expecting. That's why when Biden met with Xi Jinping in November in Bali, Biden asked Xi Jinping to recognize, you know, and do something about North Korea's provocations. But Xi Jinping replied that, you know, I have the text here, that is that we should face up to the crux of the matter and should consider each party's concerns. And that is very diplomatic language. However, you know, what is important comes next. Xi Jinping said we should consider, you know, each party's concerns, especially your chief, you know, especially the reasonable concerns of North Korea, you know, 朝方, the 合理, 关切. That's what Xi Jinping told Biden. So Xi Jinping is de facto siding with North Korea, not the United States.
Do you think that has something to do with the intensifying U.S.-China strategic rivalry? And do you expect that China will double down on its relationship with North Korea, like with Russia, to challenge the U.S.? Or do you think Beijing will come back and help the international community curb Pyongyang's nuclear ambitions?
Well, China sees North Korean issue as part of its rivalry with the United States. And in the U.S.-China rivalry, both sides see the coming decade as a deciding period in terms of which country will win the competition. So it'll be, I think, difficult to gain China's cooperation on North Korea during this very intense competitive period. And actually, if I may, I think it was a strategic mistake from the very beginning of Washington to give the driver's seat in dealing with North Korean issue to China, because from China's geopolitical structure, China is never in a position to abandon or give up or cripple the North Korean regime, because North Korean regime is so precious to China's, you know, established legitimacy as a socialist country, also ideology. And they used to be, you know, they were the Cold War buddy-buddy relationship. You know, they're pretty close friends. And they have same adversary, that is the United States. But China often found that displaying the appearance of cooperating on North Korean issue, you know, pleases Washington and helps the bilateral relationship, massages the relationship, and smooths out the relationship. Not many people explicitly say so, but I think, you know, North Korea served as a very convenient symbol of cooperation between Washington and Beijing. However, now what China's strategic pretense to appear cooperating with Washington on North Korean issue, I think, is finally over.
Let's touch on South Korea. So unlike former South Korean President Moon, who followed a policy of strategic ambiguity and balancing between the U.S. and China, the current president, Yoon Suk-yeol, is not afraid to openly align with the U.S. How does this shift in position affect stability in the Korean Peninsula?
Well, first of all, I want to compliment you on your good pronunciation of, you know, South Korean names, Yoon Suk-yeol, and, you know, also Korean names like Kim Jong-un and other names. You sound like a very Korean.
Well, thank you.
You know, as you mentioned, you know, the current South Korean government is different from the previous one. And the Yoon Suk-yeol government thinks North Korea under the previous Moon Jae-in administration became a spoiled brat. And so this current government, Yoon Suk-yeol, now has the mindset of, you know, if you blink, you lose. So you gotta be tough. You must be strong and be steady to, you know, teach your lesson to North Korea and to let North Korea blink first. But, you know, North Korea is not very accustomed to, you know, blink first either. So there is this risk for escalating tit for tat. In addition, it appears that, you know, North Korea has become more confident these days about its military power, as it did not, you know, stop its provocations, even during the recent U.S.-South Korea combined joint military exercise. That means the two sides will continue to raise the ante as they play a game of chicken, making the current situation even more dangerous, as you mentioned, than ever before. And furthermore, despite the series of North Korea's provocations last year, you know, North Korea still remains very low in Washington's policy priority, as Washington is preoccupied with, you know, it's understandable, Ukraine, also China and Taiwan and Russia, and which reportedly takes, you know, what I heard was that, you know, 70% of Washington's foreign policy time right now. So North Korea takes only a very small portion of Washington's policy attention, despite all these provocations. And during the Biden-Xi Jinping summit in November, Biden told Xi that that if China doesn't contain North Korea, then Washington will increase more military deployment in Asia. And this is actually, you know, Washington's, you know, old strategy of outsourcing the North Korean issue to China to solve. But as I explained, China, I think, will not as much willing to help as it used to do, given the, you know, deepening and intensifying U.S.-China rivalry. And with China's intentional negligence on North Korea and Washington's elevating military deterrence posture, what I'm afraid to see is that it's like there is no adult supervision on the North Korean issue right now.
So I remember this issue caused much backlash from Beijing and also enormous economic damage a few years back in 2016. Do you foresee the installation of the U.S. anti-missile system THAAD or the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense will move forward in South Korea? And now, with a stronger and more assertive China, how do you think Beijing will react?
I think that, you know, Beijing, during this very abrupt and chaotic reopening of China, and there is a dramatic increase of COVID-19 infection rates in China, and China was not disclosing the, you know, correct information and infection numbers. So South Korea, in response, tightened arrivals from China. So China retaliated by taking the similar measures. At the same time, you just mentioned the THAAD issue. China also demanded, you know, South Korea to deal with the THAAD issue. This is very surprising because, and also very concerning because, you know, beginning with the new administration in South Korea, you know, when the two leaders of presidents, you know, Yoon Suk-yeol and Xi Jinping, they met each other, there was more or less a understanding in the air that they will move forward by putting aside that issue. But China recently again brought up the THAAD issue to pressure South Korea, an ally of the United States. So this is going to be very concerning. And in the deepening and intensifying U.S.-China rivalry, China is not just, you know, standing up to the United States, but also at the same time, China is pressuring U.S. allies and partners who are siding with the United States. So there should be a more communication and dialogue and cooperation and coordination between U.S. and its allies and partners in how they could constructively deal with the pressures, both diplomatic, political, and also economic pressures coming from China.
There are many more questions I want to discuss, but we don't have much time left. To close this out, what's the possibility of South Korea going nuclear?
Well, President Yoon brought it up, but then he paddled it back a little bit. I think Yoon wanted to send a signal to Washington that actually it has to do with the topic that we have been discussing today. There is an increasing threat coming from North Korea, at the same time, pressure coming from China as well. And South Korea feels increasingly insecure, unsafe, and the polls show that, you know, 70 to 80% of South Korean citizens want nuclear weapons. But you know that that is not the way to go in this age of, you know, non-proliferation of nuclear weapons. We want to reduce the number of nuclear weapons, not increase them. So South Korea depends on its security on United States in the nuclear umbrella. But amid intensifying skyrocketing threats and missile tests, North Korea has been conducting these days, South Korean citizens are increasingly feels insecure and unsafe. And they think that what if North Korea, you know, uses its nuclear weapons, because particularly after Putin in Russia you know, mentioned about possible use of nuclear weapons in its war against Ukraine. So the narrative is intensifying, and people in South Korea feel unsafe, insecure, and they are demanding the government to do more. So I think that there are some people in South Korea that we know, you know, we are protected by nuclear umbrella from Washington, but we should examine where the umbrella is broken or not. We want the umbrella to be sturdy and very safe so that when the time comes to make sure that U.S. will really protect South Korea when South Korea doesn't have nuclear weapons. I think Yoon's intention is not really to have nuclear weapons, but to send a political signal that Washington should take South Korea's concerns seriously, particularly when South Korea relies on its security on Washington and Washington's nuclear umbrella.
Seung-hyun, thank you for helping us unpack these evolving issues. What a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. It is a great pleasure and also fun to talk with you about this very interesting, also important, or even serious issues that we should tackle. So thank you for giving me this opportunity to share with you today.
Listeners, remember to look for the Bush China Foundation podcast on our website, SoundCloud, and Spotify, where you can follow our conversations. Thank you for listening.